Hi, I'm Michelle Segrist, and this is the Factory of the Future podcast.
This podcast is inspired by my three-volume book series on the evolution of modern manufacturing. Each episode features engaging conversations with game-changing experts discussing the processes and innovations that are changing the landscape of modern manufacturing. Thank you so much for listening. Please do me a favor and leave me a 5-star rating on iTunes and take just a couple of seconds to leave a review. And then go ahead and hit that subscribe button right now so you don't miss a single episode. Hey everyone, I'm real excited today to bring you a really fabulous guest. Sarah Sladek has been referred to as a social equality expert, and she's recognized as a talent economy influencer. So we're going to find out what both of those things are. But first, let me tell you a little bit about her. Over the past 20 years, she has become a renowned thought leader on the topics of generational shifts, engagement strategies, and change management. Membership associations, nonprofits, and Fortune 500 companies have relied on her strategic guidance and next-gen intelligence to successfully plan their futures, foster collaborative cultures, and realize growth. Since 2002, Sarah has been researching declines in employee turnover alongside shifts in demographics, social values, economics, and consumerism. As a result, she has identified why sharp declines in employee engagement occur and what organizations must do to successfully reverse that decline. Sarah is the founder and CEO of XYZ University, and this is a generational research and future-focused management consulting and training firm. She's also the author of 5 books, including Talent Generation, which is based on her research of the nation's most profitable and people-centric organizations in existence today. The book identifies the game-changing strategies that are essential to engaging talent in today's ever-changing marketplace. Now, Sarah's expertise has been prominently featured in international media, and she has been the keynote speaker at worldwide events. Backed by years of experience and supported by solid research, she remains committed to helping organizations plan for their futures and prosper in the new economy. So without further delay, let's bring Sarah in here and have a talk with her. Hey, Sarah, how are you today?
Hey, Michelle, I am great. Really happy to be here. Thank you.
Oh, it's my pleasure. It's a real, real treat for us to have you here today. And I want to invite everyone to stick around because we're going to have some bonus content on the role that women play in manufacturing, and that will be on my Patreon page. So that's exclusive content. So don't forget to head on over to www.patreon.com/factoryofthefuture to get that bonus content. But first, let's have a conversation about this really interesting topic. The main topic is retaining young talent, right? Because retaining young talent is a little bit different than retaining older talent. Can you explain why?
I certainly can. And buckle in. I'm going to try to keep this.
Okay, good. I can't wait. I've been waiting a long time for this conversation.
All right. Let's do it. Okay. So we know that there are gaps in the workforce, and we hear a lot about gaps, and we hear a lot about skills gaps and how difficult it is to retain talent. What we don't hear a lot about is why that's happening. And it's happening because we've seen a major shift in the late 1990s, early 2000s. We really, truly shifted out of an industrial era. And that might sound kind of crazy because the industrial era was founded in the 1700s. But we still have so many remnants in our workforce today of exactly how organizations were run then. However, we have entire generations who've been born and raised since then that have very different skill sets, different mindsets, different experiences and worldviews. in the industrial era, everything was kind of linear. So you'd start your career at the bottom, work your way up. You would do
exactly.
You'd do A and then B and then C. And everything kind of had a structure and a process and a hierarchy. But for the generations born since the year 2000, it's definitely not been like that. The world has been chaotic, disruptive, on demand, instant gratification, customization, personalization, globalization, and on and on and on. So young people come into the workplace and they're expecting a very different experience. And we can even point to shifts in parenting that occurred. And so young people come in, they expect to have a great relationship with their employer. They expect to have a voice and a seat at the table. They're expecting things to be innovative and chaotic and nimble and flexible and remote and all of those things. But obviously, some of these workplaces that have been around for quite some time, they say, well, wait a minute, we don't work like that. And there's immediately a gap in a clash that occurs. So as a result, it's become really, really difficult for many organizations to retain young talent.
This is so interesting. It wasn't just a snap of a finger. Okay, it's Y2K. I remember that's what they called it. You know, all of a sudden it's year 2000 and all of a sudden this generation decided they needed more, were entitled to more, demanded more. It couldn't have just happened just like that. Was it gradual or
right?
That instant?
So it is kind of instant, yes. So really came of age right alongside technology. Technology changed everything. And I like to give the example of Google because Google was founded in the late 1990s, and we kind of laugh about that. It was two guys literally started this tech company in their garage. And at first they were laughed at when they said what they were creating because people couldn't, you know, grasp the idea of SEO and search engine and what the heck is that. But then they laughed when these young individuals said, we're going to create a radically different company because we believe people want meaningful work and they want knowledge of what's happening in their environment and they want the opportunity to shape their environment. And everyone said, oh, ha, 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 ha. You know, that's not what work is. Work's just a job. You just punch the clock. You know, that's what previous generations were raised thinking, but Google really changed work as we know it in more ways than one.
I remember we started hearing about, first it started out to be like casual Friday or Taco Tuesday, or then people were bringing their dogs to work with them, or, you know, they were having flexible working hours, and all these things started to change what we thought was the normal 8 to 5 workday with 1 hour for lunch or 30 minutes for lunch or whatever it was. So there was definitely a shift there. And I do think that, do you think that it engaged employees better? Do you think that people wanted to come to work because they could dress casually and bring their dog?
No, although, you know, originally, okay, so in the late 1990s, early 2000s. In fact, we can point to the actual year 2000 because that's when Gallup started researching employee engagement because there was a bit of a hunch that, wow, people aren't as engaged as they used to be. The quit rate is going up. We're having turnover. People are just kind of complaining more about their jobs. What is happening? So Gallup started studying it. And every year since the year 2000, despite all this increased awareness that we need to have a different workforce style and approach, the employee disengagement has remained at an all-time high. So approximately 70% of the workforce is disengaged, meaning they don't really like showing up for work. They're kind of miserable. But originally, this data started coming out and everyone's like, oh, you know what? Let's just make work a little bit cooler.
Make it cool to go to
work. Yeah, let's have ping pong tables and bring your dog to work day. And that'll be enough. And that's definitely not the case, because one thing hasn't changed. People really want to feel like they belong. And belonging isn't just bring your dog to work day, one day a year, or even open work environments. It's deeper than that. It's literally, I want a voice in the seat at the table. I want to feel respected. I want to feel included. I want to feel like I'm part of the team. And I want to be challenged. And I want to do work I enjoy.
Yeah, it makes perfect sense. And I recently had a conversation with another expert who was saying the same things, that the demands aren't always more pay or a better work environment. Sometimes they want to be heard. They want, as you said, a seat at the table. They want their ideas to be considered, and they want to know that they're involved in the creative process. So that makes sense that's
And there what's is happening. Another piece within all this, since you brought up pay. And this is one of those little hush-hush topics, but it's so true. When we look at, we have continued to pay executives higher and higher and higher salaries. And so the pay differentiation is so considerable. And now we're kind of throwing money at the turnover problem and hoping that'll solve things. But we have a long ways to go in terms of that. So in 1965, executive pay was, I think, 24 times worker pay. Well, today it's over 300 times higher than worker pay. So we've continued, you know, when you talk about things like innovation and taking the time to really build out healthy work environments and team building, quite frankly, we've continue to pay executives higher and higher salaries to keep doing more of the same. So then there's a resistance to innovation. Well, why would I do that? Because I'm quite comfortable over here. So I'm going to just keep doing what I'm doing. And if you don't like it, you can leave. Well, that's why we're in the predicament we are. We knew for a long time that people were unhappy, and now we have the great resignation, but this isn't new. This has long been predicted.
I would really love it if you would explain to us the difference in the generations, because I always get confused about this, and there are probably some listeners out there who feel the same way that I do. So your company is called XYZ University. And when I first heard that, I thought that was just a fun name for a company. I didn't realize it had to do with the generations. Can you explain to us the differences between X, Y, and Z generations?
Absolutely. So I'll start with the baby boomers, because baby boomers were the majority of the workforce for 34 years. That's another little fact that we don't really spend a lot of time examining, but no, it's no surprise then that companies and entire industries got used to they were such a huge population at the time, hence baby boom. But the generation that follows them is Gen X, and Xers are called X because they're born at the crossroads of cultural and social change, you know, women's rights movement, civil rights movement. But there was also a huge social shift to focus in baby boomers and previous generations. It was about they were raised to value conformity and loyalty and security. For the generations born since 1965, they've been raised to value individuality. And Gen X was the first generation. So 1965 to 81, social change was beginning to accelerate. This whole move towards do what you want, independence, individuality type of mindset. And then in 1982 to 95 is when Generation Y is born. And in the States, we have coined the phrase millennials, but internationally, they're more commonly known as Gen Y. And this generation is actually even larger than the baby boomer generation. So that's another reason why we've kind of become very, very fascinated by this idea of change, because they're pushing the accelerator on that, pushing that forward as the largest generation in history. Now they have been followed by Generation Z, born 1996 to 2009. And Gen Zs have kind of, if you have a Gen Z in your life, you know that they are kind of have catapulted over traditional adolescence right into adulthood because of the pace of disruption and change keeps accelerating. That's why we have generations, by the way. Generations are just simply looking at the macro trends that tend to emerge and the commonalities that tend to emerge for a group of people raised during a similar time in history. So whatever's happening on a social global scale, it tends to influence your values. That doesn't mean every single person's exactly the same, but it means there's definite trends and commonalities that emerge. So Gen Z has been raised during a time of incredible disruption, and they really are very serious and contemplative and advocating and protesting for real sustainable change, whether it's climate change, gun control, safety, all kinds of issues. They're at the forefront of it. And then following Gen Z, which we're just beginning to explore them, they're currently called Generation Alpha. Whether that name will stick, we'll see. But the oldest alphas are just beginning to enter the oldest are 12 this year. And we don't really understand generational markers till individuals get into those teen years. So we have just a little bit more study to do on that.
That's so interesting. I find it incredibly fascinating, this whole conversation. Mm-hmm. So when we're talking about this problem that we have in manufacturing right now of not only recruiting and hiring the best talent, but also retaining the best talent, are there different strategies that companies are using to retain the old, the Gen X and Ys, different than the Gen Zs? Are there different strategies that they use?
So I'm gonna kind of turn that
question may not make
right.
sense.
No, you it makes see sense.
What I'm asking, yeah.
Yeah, it makes sense.
Didn't ask it very well.
So, all right. So there's a few things at play here. Number one, there's a lot of talk about we got to recruit people. We got to recruit. And my answer is always, yes, absolutely, you need talent. But first and foremost, you better focus on retention. Because if people are coming in or they're leaving, or they're coming in and leaving right away, that's not a good sign. That's a sign right. that something needs to be fixed. And if you just keep right. recruiting talent, it's just going to exacerbate the problem that already occurs. So you first and foremost need to understand why people are leaving and address that and create, be on a mission to create a healthy, inspiring, team building, collaborative environment. That's number one. Yeah. The other thing is, our firm does do generational research, and we do find, again, on a macro level, there's definitely common trends and values that emerge. So as an example, when we ask individuals of different generations, how would you define success? The answers differ. How would you define the ideal leader? The answers differ. So what are you most challenged with? What are you and your peers most challenged with right now? The answers differ. And those are important questions for employers to be asking their own teams and doing the research for themselves, because you can't engage talent until you understand and build relationships with your people. So all these things are happening simultaneously. So I can tell you some of the responses that we receive and how it varies by generation, but I also think it's critically important that employers do that for themselves and get to know the people they're working with and what they need, what they want, what they expect.
Yeah, every company is different mm-hmm. and every culture is different. Mm-hmm. And just because you have a certain company culture doesn't mean that can't change or grow or evolve in order to be more successful as a company full on. Because companies, most companies are about the people. Let's face it, it's the people. We think we have a lot of conversations on this podcast about manufacturing being completely overtaken by robots one day. Mm-hmm. And that could happen. But I still believe that the people are at the heart of it. And I'm just wondering, okay, so let's say you get some good talent into your manufacturing facility. You've got a multitude of generations. So you've got good older talent, good younger talent, good new raw talent, and you manage to get them and keep them. How do you get them to all work together? Because they have different mindsets. They have different expectations. How does that happen? Because they still have to work, you know, a Gen Y person may have to work with a baby boomer.
Right, right. They absolutely should be working together. So what I have learned through research is that the organizations that have really high profitability, high engagement, high productivity, they really focus on that cognitive diversity. So that means they are literally bringing all generations together to collaborate and problem solve and share ideas and do that on a continual basis. This is brand new stuff here. This is kind of radical. And here again, we don't really stop to think about it all that often. But ever since the beginning of time, ever since caveman days, the elder of any given society had all the wisdom and all the experience. Everyone would gather around, learn from the elder. But as a result of increased changes in society, increased access to information and technology, we now have new skill sets, worldviews, perspectives emerging. And for the first time in history, every generation has something to learn and something to teach. And so it's not just about hierarchy and the elders anymore. The experienced talent can learn from the entry-level talent and vice versa. So I think if we can be better about making decisions, coming up with ideas, troubleshooting problems, and doing it as a multi-generational teams, we will be much more successful.
I would think more productive too. There's not so much push and pull among the generations to get things done. Mm-hmm. And let's face it, sometimes you need that old tribal knowledge from the elders, and sometimes you need the tech savvy and the kind of the expertise that only the younger generation can bring.
Exactly.
So I guess embracing that and embracing both and appreciating both and also rewarding both in some sort of way. Yeah. Do you think that the older generation, the baby boomers and the Gen Xers demand or find reward in different things than the younger people do? Or do you think it's really all the same? Because I know that probably the baby boomers were more motivated by just higher pay or more benefits or more vacation or whatever. And the younger generation may want to work from home or bring their dog to work or dress casually or whatever. Do you see a difference in what makes them tick and what makes them happy about a work environment?
Yeah. So So I'll go back to what I was saying previously about asking key questions of different generations. One of the questions we ask is, how would you define success? And it is true when we look at careers, baby boomers do typically, again, this is the majority, not every single person, but the majority will say that they want financial security and stability. They want that paycheck. And quite frankly, that was... For most of their career, that was the thing, right? It was all about just give me my check. And then I clock out and I have my time off. For Gen X, they define success by work-life balance. So the opportunity to be great parents, great at their career, the opportunity to do both simultaneously or to have that time off, but also really excel and in the workforce. And then for millennials and Gen Z, they define success as happiness. Now, when we started doing this research,
it's a pretty broad word, yes, because what makes one person happy doesn't make the other person happy.
Right. So when we started doing this research, and we've been doing this for a decade now, initially it was very aligned with those words. And it was just fascinating to see over and over again these groups define that. But it's really interesting. Just lately, we've seen that happiness word trickling up. And I think this is really key to note that throughout history, social change always starts with the youngest generation. And it trickles its way up and influences the masses, everything from rock and roll, Harley Davidson, Facebook, taking selfies. That all started, you know, young people started doing it. And slowly but surely, all of a sudden, the elders in society are doing it. And
all of a sudden, the moms take over Facebook.
Exactly.
Right?
Grandmas and grandpas.
Exactly. So
that's all yet another reason why cognitive diversity is so important, because you are ahead of the curve rather than always responding. Mm-hmm. You are a generation ahead, not a generation behind, because you're getting that influx of new ideas, new skill sets. You're seeing things through a different lens. But I think financial security, it still plays a role. But we're also seeing that desire for inclusion, happiness, fairness, and equality and trust at work.
Yeah, and that's those are all good things.
Absolutely.
So it's nice to see those being trends and becoming trends. So there are a lot more people working at home now. Mm-hmm. COVID taught us that was possible. Mm-hmm. And now that we see that it is, a lot more people like that and want to do that. There was no change for me. I was already working from home. But I think for a lot of people, they saw, well, I can't do my job from my home office and still be here to walk my dog or take care of my children or take care of the house or whatever. But now people are starting to demand this. They got used to it. And now that things have opened back up and in workplaces where COVID is not so high threat anymore, they are wanting to do that. And that has been a problem. I've talked to many CEOs who've said this has become an issue because there are some jobs that can't be done remotely. So that's something that's happening right now. And but the question about the remote workforce is more about engagement, because that's what we're talking about. If some of your workforce or all of your workforce or even part of your workforce are working from home or working remotely, mm-hmm. working somewhere else, how do you keep them engaged? What's the secret there?
Mm-hmm. All right. So I think regardless of where you're working, it's making sure that you're doing constant touch points with your team, that people feel that they have the tools and the accountability as well to be successful alongside the freedom to work when they want to work, and that they have the trust of the team. So I think there's a little bit of a balance there, right? We have to be able to report on our work and show results, but at the same time, there has to be that flexibility that you don't have to do it, you know, at this moment when we say you have to do it. And, you know, here again, so much of what we talk about, it's like, ooh, it's radical, it's new. But, you know, Zoom's been around since, you know, I believe it's 2011. And there were companies already exploring remote work environments with real gusto. I think about Best Buy. Early on, they said, we're going to shift to a results-oriented work environment, a row environment. And they tested it, and they found that productivity went through the roof, and people were just so much more engaged to have the option. It's not for everyone, but it's important to have the option. And I think in certain industries where they say you have to be here, obviously with healthcare or some other things, yes, you do have to be there to do surgery.
That's right,
understandable.
Exactly. What yeah, it, or in manufacturing, or if you're on that line, or you have to fix machines, or you have to maintain, right, do maintenance checks and things like that, you do have to be there.
Absolutely.
There's a lot of remote monitoring that helps, mm-hmm, but for the most part, manufacturing is one of those industries where there are a lot of jobs that you have to be there.
Yeah. Absolutely. So there are certain things that the problem comes into play when you not only have to be there, but you have to be there for 12-hour shifts, or you don't, yeah, have the option on other days when you don't have to be there. You don't have the option to be remote and do telework, or that there is no flexibility. The problems come into play when environments become very inflexible and unwilling, mm-hmm, to negotiate or troubleshoot or look at other options and be creative. That's when, especially young talent says, you know what, I don't need this because there's ample job opportunities. I have my pick. Right. So see ya.
I mean, that really seems to be the other trend right now, is that back in the day when I was looking for a job, and maybe when you were looking for a job, we were begging companies to hire us. Mm. Now companies are begging these young, talented people to come work, right, for them. There's kind of a shift in the I don't know if I want to call it power that's at play there, or if it's but it just seems to be a shift. You know, that these younger people are smart enough to know that there are other jobs out there. There are plenty of jobs out there, and so they can make these demands, right, that you and I couldn't back in the day.
Right.
If we got offered a job, boy, we better take it, because we might not get it offered another one for a year or,
yeah,
more. So it was, we couldn't be so picky. We couldn't be so demanding. We certainly weren't entitled to that job. We knew we needed to pay our dues, as you said earlier, and start from the bottom and work our way up. So that's a really interesting point. There has been a shift there for sure. But I wanted to ask you about, you threw out a term there, and I know what it means, but I want to make sure everybody else does. You said you threw out the term cognitive diversity.
Oh, yes. Yes.
So tell us what that is. What is cognitive diversity, and why is that? I think you told me it's pretty key to an organization's success.
Right.
So
yeah.
Tell us what that is and why it helps with success.
Okay. Yes. So cognitive diversity is just simply the practice of building teams, bringing people together with different backgrounds, skill sets, experiences, different ages as well. So going back to that previous point that everyone has something to learn, something to teach, the organizations that really focus on that cognitive diversity tend to do excel much further, much faster, and engage employees. So it's really, you know, another way of putting it is collaboration, team building, but it's just making sure that really entry-level talent is always working alongside experienced talent, that there's not a gap, there's not a hierarchy, but rather a team approach. And so everyone's always learning from one another. Everyone's always innovating. And it drives more empathy. It drives more trust. And it just, everybody's happier overall.
Right, right. Well, it makes perfect,
yeah,
sense. But it sounds like the key takeaway there is, if you're building a team for a project, for example, you should include a wide variety of employees on that team and not just one set.
Yep.
So even if it's like a highly technical project, you shouldn't only include the tech savvy, you know, Gen Y or Gen Z. I get it confused.
Right.
The Gen Z people, the Gen Y, but you should also include some baby boomers in there, because they're going to have something to contribute.
Right.
Even if it's not with technology.
Right. So, I'm even going to go take it a step further and say,
okay,
that I think that we are actually going to see this whole movement. It's going to take time, but we're going to see a real movement away from that elder society and wisdom society focus to actually flipping to be the opposite. I think we're going to see and become extremely youth-centric. And I'm saying that for a few reasons. First of all, we have flunked miserably at onboarding new talent and preparing students and young professionals for the world of work. That repeatedly shows up time and time again. So there's skills gaps, there's mismatched expectation. Students come out of school, they're not ready. They're just not. So that fuels the turnover. We also have this huge retirement wave, and we're realizing we didn't pass the baton, we didn't prepare, we didn't pass on critical skills and knowledge, and that hinders a company. But we also know that things are just moving so much faster right now. Society change is happening really fast. And at the forefront of a lot of those changes, as I mentioned previously, are young people. They influence a lot of social change. So I think for companies to be successful and industries to be successful in the future, they're going to have to shift to literally be more youth-centric. So practicing that cognitive diversity, yes, but always thinking about trends, always getting into schools, thinking about workforce development, thinking about talent pipelines, and really rethinking education. I hope that business and education forges a stronger connection. And I in the trades and in manufacturing, that's absolutely critical.
Absolutely, it is. And it's really interesting because we talk about the skills gap in manufacturing all the time on this podcast. And it's interesting that it's not just manufacturing that has that gap from what you're saying, that there are other industries as well, that this is a universal gap that society is facing, really, and all business
is facing. It's a huge problem. In fact, 5 years ago, I believe it was, the United Nations listed workforce gaps and turnover as a chief global concern. Wow. And so it's not just a United States thing. It's a global thing. It's not just manufacturing thing. It's an every industry thing.
Every industry. That's so interesting. That's so interesting to think about, because I think I've been laser focused on thinking about this problem in terms of manufacturing. So
so that means also that manufacturing is competing against other industries for talent.
Oh, sure.
So we truly are in this tug of war. That once again was predicted not only when technology began to evolve, but it was predicted in after the baby boomer generation, and there was a population drop off with Gen X, which is a much smaller generation. And demographers and industry leaders and government officials all said, at some point we're going to have this huge retirement wave. And they've been talking about it for decades. And we really didn't prepare. We didn't prepare well at all.
We talked about it, but didn't prepare. So we're going to continue to talk about it, I'm sure. So you just kind of mentioned a little bit about what the future looks like in terms of workforce and this kind of shift in where the expertise lies. You know, I think that's a very interesting thing to think about, that we're not going to the elders anymore. Now we're relying on the younger generation to sort of lead the way. What other things are happening? What other things should organizations be thinking about to prepare for the future of the workforce and specifically manufacturing? But it sounds like it's, as we said, it's not just manufacturing.
Right. So, there's a couple trends on the horizon, and there's one that I think is real important to just mention that's a current reality, and we're going to have to figure out how to overcome it. Because amidst all this change and the need to get young talent, New York University just came out with a new study a few months ago that said it revealed that workplace hostility is at its highest ever. And what that means is that older generations are being hypercritical of young people to the point of being hostile towards them. And that is in part fueling some of the turnover. But so when I talk about cognitive diversity and collaboration, I mean, that is a big piece to get around. We can't be hostile towards the people who do come and show up to work and who we do manage to recruit. We want to retain them, and that means treating them like part of the team. So there's that. There's other trends on the horizon in terms of when we look at younger generations, and we know that for Gen Z, okay, this is going to blow your mind. All right.
Okay.
So for Gen Z, their brains have developed differently than previous generations. So we're experiencing evolution literally right now. And it's largely because certain centers of their brain have really advanced very quickly with all this access to information, but also social media. Their brains have kind of reformatted to obtain information and memories almost exclusively through photos and videos. So that means that for young people, they're high visual learners, high hands-on learners. That's good for manufacturing as long as you're training them in those ways. It's not just sit and listen while I talk to you. That's going to be really difficult for young people. So
it makes perfect sense. Yeah. They've grown up with a screen, looking at a screen since they were babies.
Yeah, exactly. So high visual learning, that's going to change how we educate, or it should, how we educate, how we train, how we onboard, all of that. And we also know that they, so this is another interesting fact, they create and consume more content than any other generation. So that means that they're coming into workplaces already knowing a whole heck of a lot about that particular workplace and that industry. So very, very informed, kind of really when you think about it, they're consumers of work because they're able to do a lot of research in advance, educate themselves, come into the interview already knowing a lot. And they may even pretend they don't know a lot to see how your workplace, what you try to sell them and what you tell them about working there. And very creative, meaning they want to actually create content on behalf of their workplaces and be really engaged in the marketing, really engaged in wearing multiple hats, not just one job type.
There's no secrets anymore.
No, there's not.
If you want to keep a secret about your company or something that happened, or a big scandal or something like that, that's not going to happen. People are going to know about it.
Right. So those are just a few things. And I think one other thing I'll note too is that young people, Gen Z, and we're also seeing it with Generation Alpha, in the aftermath of the Great Recession, when millennials had a really challenging time transitioning into careers, and they still hold the number one spot as the most debt-ridden generation in history. So parents of small children at that time had a little bit of a freak out moment, and they said, well, we're going to raise our children differently because we want to make sure they have that financial stability and they don't have to worry about jobs. So we're going to put a lot of pressure on them to compete. And that's why you see, 8-year-olds on MasterChef Junior, and you see students really fretting about grades and really, really worried about their success. Mm-hmm. So when they come into the workforce, and this is what's on the horizon, we're going to have to be mindful of things like anxiety. Helping people cope with problems, or even to have a beginner's mindset, because they have been raised to come in and know everything, know a lot. And it's okay to not have all the answers. So we're going to see a little bit, especially in the aftermath of pandemic, people may potentially have some challenges going back into social and work environments and be challenged in a few ways.
Yeah, I think that's true. And another point to make is that back in our day when we were kids, we were shielded from a lot of the world events and a lot of the things that can upset people these days, you know, that people care and have empathy for what's going on in the world. And, but I think we were guarded by all that. We were outside riding our bikes and playing kickball or whatever with the neighbors, jumping on the trampoline. Mm-hmm. And we weren't watching the news all day, every day. We didn't have access to the World Wide Web, and we didn't have access to all the news channels and things like that. So we weren't overly stressed. Oh. We were, you know, we just wanted to know what's for dinner. You know, yeah. We weren't so worried about all that. And I think this generation coming up is so exposed to everything that's happening in the world. And so I like your point about taking care of those stress factors, that anxiety, making sure that the mental health is on the radar.
Yeah. Well, and also young people, for that reason, because they're so informed and so worried about the state of the world, they're going to hold their employers accountable, and that's going to be new. Yeah. They're going to expect that.
Interesting.
What are you doing for the community? What are you doing for the industry? Are you paying attention to things like climate? Do you care? Care about right. something more than your own profitability. That's going to be very, very important to young people. And we'll see that trend shift in the workforce.
That's such an interesting conversation. I'm just fascinated by this. I understand why you've been digging so deep into it for so many years. It's really quite interesting. So is there anything else that you can tell us as we're kind of winding down, maybe just anything about what's going on with retaining young talent or old talent, and you know, anything else that we need to know that we didn't talk about already?
Sure. Well, some of this can be overwhelming, I'm sure. I'm sure there could be listeners that say, oh my gosh, where do I even start? So I sure. will explain the simplest thing you can do, the very first thing you can do. And it sounds so, so overly simplistic, but you'd be surprised how many employers just don't do this. Sit down, start putting into practice having more dialogues within the team. And not just on work projects, you know, like literally opportunities to draw names out of a hat, and you go have lunch with someone different on the team every month. Carve out time if you're the CEO that you bring in 10 employees of different ages to sit down and do a roundtable coffee chat discussion with you. What are you observing? What's going well? What's challenging? Do your own mini town hall. Find ways to foster discussions and foster relationship building. I've seen companies do, you know, gift exchanges, but you draw a name out of a hat and you buy a gift for someone. I've seen organizations start a little compliment box, and you can anonymously put in a compliment about someone, and then it's read aloud in front of the whole team meeting. Like, things to start making people feel good, get to know one another. It's really, because that is absolutely critical to long-term success. That's the best thing you can do to make sure that you're starting on that path towards cognitive diversity and collaboration and planning for the future.
That's so important. We spend so much time at work.
Mm, we spend a lot of time.
So much time in the workplace, sometimes more than time than we spend with our families.
Yeah, and we forget
that we get along and care about each other
exactly.
and respect each other.
And we forget to have fun. You know, work exactly, can be fun. Yeah. Like, take time
Absolutely.
For that. Foster those experiences and those conversations. I think it's critical.
Fantastic. I love that. That's a great place. That's a great note to end it on. I like that. So thank you so much, Sarah, for being here and sharing your knowledge. And, you know, it's just great to have you here.
Oh, thanks, Michelle.
Really appreciate
I appreciate it as well.
And to all the listeners, if you'd like to support the podcast, I want to invite you all to join the new Patreon page for exclusive content, including a bonus conversation with Sarah. Also, you can get free manufacturing books and all kinds of other cool perks. So join us on Patreon, patreon.com/factoryofthefuture. We'll see you there and have a great day. This brings us to the end of the show. Thank you so much for listening. Please do me a favor and subscribe, rate, and review the podcast on iTunes. If you have interesting information to share and want to contact me about being a guest on a future episode of this podcast, please send me an email at michelle@navigatecontent.com. You can also send me questions that I will have my expert guests answer for you on a future episode. And in the meantime, please check out my book series on modern manufacturing to read more than 30 real-world case studies about how global companies are using smart technology and innovation to build the factory of the future. All the links to the books and articles mentioned in this podcast are in the show notes. Have a great week, and please join me for the next episode of Factory of the Future.